Hours after the show was recorded, it was reported that Derek Chauvin was stabbed nearly to death in a federal prison in Arizona. The media and Minnesota state officials continue to have blood on their hands. Little information is available at this time.
Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My guest today, you all know well. He is a regular here, and he's a phenomenal author and a columnist and an observer of all that is going on in the world. As inexplicable as much of it is. Thank you for joining me, Jack Cashel.
Mel, thanks for having me. And it was a pleasure meeting you last week here in Kansas City. You know, it was like a real celebrity comes to our town.
Oh, right.
I know Taylor Swift comes every other week, but you know, who's Taylor Swift compared to Mel Kay, right?
Well, it was great meeting you too. And it was, I loved Kansas City. I'd never been there before. It's exactly where I would expect for you to be from. You came into the place and Rob looks and he goes, "Is that Jack Cashel?" I said, "It is." And you look like you walked right into the scene in a movie. It was just perfect. And I loved it.
No, it was. Great. In fact, the bar you were at was, it's about a half mile from my house. You know, I could have walked there. I didn't, but I could have, so.
Right now, that's how I pictured it.
I seemed like out of Casablanca or something, you know?
Exactly. That's how I pictured it. And it's been phenomenal. And you and I have been observing a lot of things going on lately. And I wanted to catch up first and foremost. You had sent, I saw it first from you, the sharing of the fall of Minneapolis. And a lot of people know that you had been covering this since it happened. The truth about what really happened with George Floyd and the medical examiner and all of this. And Liz Collins and her team over there, they put together a great documentary that I thought was the best I've seen so far of a film version of what happened. So your thoughts on the fall of Minneapolis, I really think everyone should see that. And let me know how you feel since you were so on the inside of everything that was going on there.
No, I just put it in a little context. You know, my daughter and my grandchildren are up in Kansas City for the weekend, and they live in Tampa. But they yesterday we went to their in-laws, for dinner. Big, beautiful, nice Thanksgiving dinner. The in-laws are sweet; they're so nice. They're apolitical, you know. So I don't raise any fuss. But I was talking to the one daughter, one of my grandchildren's cousin, and who goes to the university in Minnesota, right?
Oh, wow.
In Minneapolis. And I said, "How's Minneapolis doing?" I said, "Has you guys recovered?" "Oh, there's some very nice spots." "And I know, but how did you know?" "Well, not really. We really haven't recovered." And I really wanted to say, "You really need to see the fall of Minneapolis."
Right.
But I couldn't raise it because it would take too much education to even begin to talk about that.
Right.
It's extremely well done, the fall of Minneapolis. Liz Collin and her partner did a great job. Just a matter-of-fact job, just laying out case after case. The interviews with the police officers was incredibly compelling.
Yes.
They had audio interviews with both, Kung, Alex Kang, and also with Derek Chauvin from prison.
Right.
And the total picture of his leaves you. I mean, you and I have known this for 3 years. It's not, there wasn't a lot of new information. But I was grateful to see it put together the way it is, because for so many people who saw it and talked about it, including people like, Tucker Carlson, people like several major, I mean, Jesse Waters, Megyn Kelly, right?
Right.
It was news. It came as news. And it was done so well that it's hard to refute. And what you're looking at is arguably the most spectacular case of public injustice in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And people need to see it. In fact, today, just before I came on the air, I was going back and reading the news accounts of the Supreme Court's rejection of Chauvin's appeal. And the authors of all this mainstream stuff have no sense that there's anything amiss, right? They're still piling on, right? Just like the court did. We need to up the ante on Chauvin, because 15 years isn't enough. We've, blah, blah, blah. It was appalling. So
it's hard to believe. I mean, the what we're living through right now is so, you know, I told you I was obsessed in college with Hannah Arendt and a lot of the things that she talked about propaganda, especially, you know, that it's so easy to take over, that the easiest time for totalitarians to take over society is when the people have nothing and everything, and nothing's possible and everything's real. And it's just this constant flow of information. And I really could not believe, I still can't believe people that have no idea what happened in that case. And you know what? The hardest part with me watching it, there was an arrest of George Floyd that was almost similar. Same verbiage, same I can't breathe, same the whole thing was exactly almost the same that we got to see in that. We saw the cop that pulled him over the first time from the first arrest, that it was almost the same act. Second, you know, they really dug into, I thought, you know, what the cops were going through, what they were dealing with. This was never seen from, this is a giant man, like in a state of total chaos. And and really watching that, it wasn't just resisting arrest. It was like layer upon layer of drama upon drama. Right. And how do you deal with this? And then the people coming up. And the hardest, I think, part of it all is to look back and think that we have now turned this person, George Floyd, into such a hero that there are streets named after him. Joe Biden is signifying his day he died as a national holiday, basically a month or two ago. We have paintings and murals and statues of this person that is not a hero, that is not they tore down so many of our heroes' statues and monuments and changed names of real heroes. And now this guy is supposed to be a hero. When you watch that, you just think, oh, my God, it's such a testament to what happened to our country, our society.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, when I was doing the research for my book, Untenable, the true story of ethnic flight from America's cities.
Right.
My cousin, who's still in the Newark Police Department, took me on a tour of downtown. We did a 2-day tour of Newark, and we went to every neighborhood.
Right.
And so we come downtown and we see the stump of the statue where Christopher Columbus had stood, right? Wow. Now, this statue had been donated to the city of Newark by the Italian American community about nearly a century ago. And it was a major moment of ethnic solidarity and assimilation, you know, where they were projecting Columbus as both their hero and America's hero.
Yeah.
And it was a brilliant statue in a military park, George and Washington Park. That's gone. It just, there was a stump now. I think they're going to put Harriet Tubman up there or something. But then we go to City Hall. This is Newark City Hall. And there is a 700-pound statue of George Floyd sitting on a bench in front of City Hall, right? And they trashed the Columbus statue. They were supposed to preserve it. But my cousin said the cops found it laying on the side of the highway.
God.
What my Goomba friends did, which bless their hearts, there was a second Italian Christopher Columbus statue in Newark in front of a church. They got their construction buddies together, got a big flatbed truck, and took it out before the city could get to it or the rioters could get to it. And that almost symbolizes exactly what happened with the Floyd's death. But the just in my own case, my involvement in this case is kind of funny because about 3 weeks ago, I get a call from this guy who's gone, whose name is now in the public sphere, but I promised him I wouldn't use it. I call any article, I call him Dr. Quincy after the medical examiner, the thing. I just call him Quincy. He lives in metropolitan Kansas City, and he is a retiring pathologist for a major medical center, you know, with 40 years experience, very sophisticated guy. And he wanted to meet to talk about the Floyd case. And so he said, I got your name from D.C. And I'm thinking, D.C., like someone in Washington, I don't know. And then he said it again. Yeah, D.C. said, dude. I said, who's D.C.? What are you talking about? He said, Derek Chauvin. You know, we're in a restaurant. So he goes, Derek Chauvin? You know, so, he'd been communicating with Chauvin.
Wow.
He's the reason Chauvin has filed his most recent appeal. And that is for incompetent a counsel.
Right.
What this doctor discovered, and I'm convinced he's right. What I did is I ran his opinion by the doctor I had been consulting with, this guy, Dr. John Dunn of Texas, who's a really great guy, a hardcore guy, and did a recreation, a very sophisticated recreation of the Floyd Chauvin encounter.
Right.
You know, with an oximeter and, you know, testing it all the way through with two guys mirroring the weight of both Chauvin and Floyd, exact position, exact time, no consequence at all, right? As he expected.
Right.
And so I ran Quincy's theory by Dunn. And Dunn is, you know, like I say, he's hard nosed. He's ready to reject it out of the chute. He didn't want, you know, hear BS opinion. And he's an ER forensic doctor with a long time experience, written chapters on forensic medicine, et cetera. After reviewing it and then reviewing the 2019 arrest, almost a year to the day before, said, no, that Quincy's right. And here's the theory. And it doesn't contradict what you and I have believed, but it adds detail. Is it Floyd was found, and Baker acknowledges, Andrew Baker, the medical examiner, Hennepin County, admitted it. He had a tumor on his pelvis. And it was I may be doing an injustice to this word, but it's paraganglioma is what it is. And basically it's like an adrenaline time bomb. It's rare, very rare. And what Quincy argued is that in 2019, when the police approached Floyd on this OxyContin bust, he freaked out almost exactly like he did in 2020.
Right.
Now, in the film, they believe that it was an act, and the cops probably believed it was an act as well. But Quincy argues that he had all of the symptoms of what happens when this rush of an adrenaline-like substance flows into your body, especially when you have a distressed heart. The sweating, the hyperventilating, the craziness, the anxiety, the claustrophobia, you know. The difference was that, as Quincy says, is that in 2019, when the police approached the car, Floyd knew he was being busted. They didn't startle him. In 2020, Thomas Lane comes up to the car. Floyd's there nodding off or whatever he's doing, and he taps the window. And Floyd absolutely freaks out.
Right. Yes.
And I think it was a genuine freak out.
Yeah.
And he's behaving, you know, he starts crying like a baby.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he didn't expect that to knock on the window. I mean, watching.
No, and that says, Quincy, is exactly how these things are triggered, right? By just shock. And then we can't even get his feet under him when he's walking across the street. They got to help him across. Even before he gets into the patrol car, he's like, I can't breathe. It's going to go off, he says. And Quincy says it's already gone off. He knows something the cops don't know. Right. He knows that his system is going crazy. He has, as even Baker, a medical examiner, acknowledged, severe heart disease. That's in the autopsy report, severe heart disease. And so Quincy's of the opinion that nothing the officers did caused this, and nothing they could have done would have stopped it. He argues that if they had gotten him medical help sooner, they would have given him a shot of adrenaline, which would have just killed him on the spot.
That's
not what he did. Because it's such a rare case. And what Baker did not do, even though he acknowledged that this tumor was there, and he named it by name, paraganglioma, he did not test for it. He did not test for, there's a name for the kind of crisis it is. I butcher that name, so I'm going to leave that one alone. But whether, you know, and Quincy is kind of, give him the benefit of doubt that he didn't know enough to test for it. Dunn, the other doctor, my other doctor said, no, he knew. They just didn't want to see the results. Because if they had seen the results, that would have made it even harder for them to basically doctor the medical exam.
Right.
The medical examiner's report.
Yeah. And you brought up something before we came on air. There were a lot of, you know, what happens in every case like this, and because we're at such a heightened state right now, we have been for several years now, people start to look at it and they come up with all different things. Like, you know, he was in on it, did this, that, you know, it was a dummy. It was a, what this fall of Minneapolis does, I think, really, this is why I think everyone should watch it, is it really personalizes everyone in this, especially the cops, and not the cops that were involved. I'm talking about the cops that were peripheral and came in after the fact. And because when you see them talk about the burnt down cop station, the police headquarters, that they shut down the police headquarters, and you see these cops tell their story about not just what happened that day, but what happened after, and the defund the police and the demonization of the cops and all of that, that happened in every city. And I don't think people fully understand that this was a coordinated effort, but that these, it wasn't just the cops involved that got, right. You know, it was all cops. I felt so bad for all the cops that were interviewed. And then to watch it, not only do I think Chauvin should not be in jail, but certainly watching that, you don't think the other cops should have been charged with anything. And it just seems so obvious to me. And I can't believe that any fair person would see it any other way.
Right. The one cop who should be charged is the police chief.
Yeah. And the mayor. I mean, not maybe not the mayor, but the mayor was so complicit. Of course, the what's his name? Ellison. Like, these people knew the truth the whole time.
Yeah. And with the problem with the police chief, and this is, I thought, the strongest point made in the film was he gets up on the stand and testifies under oath. That's why I would say he should be charged. He says, oh, no, they've never been trained on this maximum restraint technique. I think it's called MRT.
Right.
And then they cut to the mother of Derek Chauvin. And she says, oh, yeah, I saw that. And I wanted to do is to take my manual and stand up in court and hold it. Because in the manual, as they show in the film, there are multiple images of doing exactly what Chauvin was doing, right? Yeah. And then they ask, then Liz Collin asks the cops, were you trained in MRT? Yes, 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 yes. All half dozen of them say yes. And to your point earlier about the impact of this on their lives, and several, at least two of the cops are Black, two of them were female. Not a single one of them escaped that interview without breaking down.
I know. And you could tell they didn't want to, especially the big manly man cops. One of them, it was very, very, and then don't forget, you know, I mean, not you, but the audience, one of the cops that's in jail right now is Black and another one is Asian.
Right.
So they're collateral damage to keep this narrative going. Those cops cannot even believe that they were charged, found guilty. And this is another thing I thought that came out of this, because Jack, you know, I was thinking before I was coming on with you, because you have a good sense of this. And also your book Untenable, though it doesn't deal with this specifically directly, has a lot to do with this, this jump on this bandwagon, especially by elected officials, to pander to, you know, whatever is going on at the detriment of the whole. It's not, this doesn't help the Black community, what happened with George Floyd. And to act like it was about white on Black cop violence, which was a storyline that obviously in your work and Joel Gilbert's work and a lot of people's work, we know, has been, you know, totally manipulated into something else. But the other part is my question for you here that I've been thinking about, you know, a part of this country and law and order and constitutional rights and all of that is the right to a jury of your peers, a fair trial with a jury of your peers. I don't believe that we have such a thing as a jury of our peers happening anymore. And I think it's a real issue that we really need to look at, is what is this concept of a jury of our peers? Because that's not what's going on.
Not at all. And certainly not in Minneapolis, where I think it was that Oliver Wendell Holmes said, due process is not due process if it comes at the hands of a terrified jury. And that's exactly what happened in Minneapolis. And that was the appeal, part of the appeal they made to the Supreme Court that got turned down. But, you know, I describe it as the phrase I've been using is Jacobin justice. The Jacobins were the elite leftist elite, basically, and during the French Revolution.
Right.
And their power derived from controlling the Parisian mobs, right? And they used that power to basically suspend any notion of, you know, due process or fair play. And so, you know, they executed about 10,000 people. The mob finally catches up with them, right?
Right.
Because their control over the mob is pretty tenuous, as we've seen the Democrats are learning with these Hamas mobs, right? Right.
Yes.
I mean, so they created this system of Jacobin justice where the elite control the mobs, but then the mobs take on a life of their own, and then you're, you know, then you're storming the DNC.
Yeah.
Right. That's where we are. So, and the parallel between the Floyd case, so Jacobin justice isn't just coming from the District of Columbia, where it is.
Right.
But it's there's outposts in every major city in the country. Yeah. There's no due process if you're a white cop. We have a case in Kansas City that I've been writing, a similar case. I mean, outrageous case. And I wrote an article called "A Cop Found Guilty of Policing While White." I mean, that's basically what it came down to.
Right. I mean, this is all over the country. I mean, this is why we don't have cops anymore. And then you see them, they're cutting in New York, where I just left from, which, thank God, they're cutting the budget for the cops, even still, for the illegals. I mean, the whole concept of law and order by design, and you've written about this too. Part of this is the demoralization, the complete destruction of societal norms. But it has gone to a place where, like the Jacobin justice that you're talking about, the truth of the matter is that they're not even the concept of a jury of our peers is very important. Obviously, none of these January 6th defendants had a jury of their peers. Most of them weren't from D.C., let alone D.C. being 98% Democrat, large minority. Most of these people were white, middle class, if not blue collar people getting thrown in jail by not a jury of their peers. And again, even in the Floyd case, that wasn't either. I mean, going all the way back to OJ, you know, what a jury of our peers should, maybe there needs to be a new, I don't know what to do, but a new standard to what that entails. What is a jury of our peers?
Well, certainly a change of venue would help. I think in most criminal trials, justice is rendered, right? It's the ones where they have it has a political, a political contingency, like in, obviously, in Minneapolis and obviously in New York. Trump got 4% of the vote in the District of Columbia in 2016. That means that you pull a jury pool of 25 people, one of them voted for Donald Trump, right?
It's like and the New York City case.
You're
cases.
Sure that they're going to strike, they're going to find that person and strike him, you know, before he's gets in the jury box. The people in D.C. have had nothing like due process, and was fairly appalling. Is it operations like the ACLU, which,
please,
you know, at least theoretically would be outraged by this, are part of the mob. I mean, they're part of the Jacobins who are stirring up the mob to continue this massive injustice. No change of venue. That's crazy. And both in Minneapolis and in Washington.
Yeah, and they've put in, I've talked to three of the different lawyers representing January 6th people. They've all tried to get change of venue, all of them, and they get turned down every time. The judges in D.C. are totally, you know, it's a whole different thing. You know, what's interesting, though, what you just said about the jury is one of my many jobs along my way, my 20-something years in Hollywood, in the writing game, you need other jobs. So one of my jobs was I worked for a company that did voir dire and try where if people don't know what that is, that's the questionnaire that you ask jurors. That was their job. It was a giant firm. They did very well. They were out of Brentwood and they got called into giant cases to help the attorneys pick juries.
Yeah.
That's another thing that's wrong with the jury system, because I'll tell you, and they got paid a lot of money, but you had to have the money to hire them, which means you had to have the money to get the attorney, where it's like, When you're going into that, they had a whole strategy of getting rid of jurors as they go. And it was very methodical. We did all kinds of mock trials. It was a very cool job, I have to say. I learned a lot.
Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. We did mock trials and it was a whole science behind picking a jury. Well, that is a real thing. And if that's a real thing, then that means that the whole concept of a jury of your peers picked, you know, randomly of the populace is totally corrupted anyway. So to me, it's like it takes a whole piece of justice out if there's jury tampering before the jury is even picked. Hey guys, thank you for watching the show. I just want to remind you yet again that we really need to be very cautious of what is going on with the economy, both here and internationally. Most of us know that the BRICS nations are looking for a gold-backed currency to dethrone the dollar being the world reserve currency. They have an event coming up on August 22nd. The BRICS nations are all going. There are also 13 other nations that would like to join the BRICS nations. And this is not something to not pay attention to. We have to make sure that you protect your savings. And that is why I have chosen Beverly Hills Precious Metals. That is where I have gotten my gold and silver. I leave it in a depository. I know it's there. I've replaced it with my savings. I've put there to make sure that I weather the storm no matter what, be it the central bank digital currency, the BRICS nations, the dollar goes into collapse, whatever may happen. I know 401k, IRA, backed by gold, as well as having my savings, at least an amount of my savings in gold, in the depository or sent to you at home, is the best way to make sure you maintain peace of mind and make sure that your savings and everything that you've earned is safe no matter what comes. We will get through this. All is not lost. America will return to greatness as it always has been. But between now and then, we have to be very smart and very cognizant of what's going on. So please go to Mel K Gold, or go to the MelKShow.com partners page and go to Beverly Hills Precious Metals, and my friend Andrew will take care of you. He's got a great team. Gold is the way to go right now, and I know that no matter what, I'm safe. So please do that for yourselves. We really care about you here. You're more like family and friends, and I hear from all of you a lot. So I just want to make sure that you guys are doing something proactive to be prepared. All will be well, but take care of yourself now. Being prepared is always a good thing.
No, you're right. I mean, it's all sort of orchestrated. Although I will say this, is that I sat through the voir dire in the trial of George Zimmerman 10 years ago in Sanford, Florida. In fact, I got a text here from George yesterday. Happy Thanksgiving, Jack. Hope you're well. Good friend. I'm particularly thankful for your continued friendship. Oh, George is a great guy.
I know.
He's good. He goes by a different name now, but that's good. I won't reveal that. And I said to him, I said, just thinking about you. And I asked him, I said, have you seen The Fall of Minneapolis? And I said, that Joel Gilbert, our mutual friend, is getting traction as people realize that your case is a bookend to the Minneapolis case. The difference is that in Zimmerman's case, he got a good jury. It was a six-person jury in Florida. And it was all women. What they had in common was that they were all completely ignorant.
They were picked because they could actually, or they were trying. Well, the thing about Florida that's weird that I think people don't realize, I've been watching a lot of stuff lately. Florida, because it has the sunshine laws.
Right.
Florida is, if you notice, like on Dateline, 48 Hours, all these true crime shows, they're often in Florida. And it's because, I believe, of that. So people could see George Zimmerman's jury. Like everything is out in the open. So I'm not surprised that he had a jury of actually people that could be that could put aside bias and judge, because there's a lot of eyes on Florida legal system, which there should be everywhere. But I have a feeling that that's why it's more likely, because I don't think other states have these laws that they do in Florida, where basically everything is shown. So, you know, when you're watching these documentaries, like a Dateline, you're like, wow, how did they get that? I think it's all public record because of Florida's law.
It is. And that's how Joel Gilbert got a hold of all their phone logs, right? For Trayvon and his real
Florida.
Girlfriend.
Now, right.
His real girlfriend now is, by the way, a flight attendant for American Airlines. She
resisted
the urge to perjure herself. Well, to her credit, she was only 16 at the time.
I know.
And then in just one of the most blatantly corrupt acts of our time, Benjamin Crump orchestrating, they substitute a fake witness, right?
It's so bad. I mean, it's so bad.
Witness. And then the bookend in Minneapolis is every element of that trial was corrupted. And not only did they deny the defense the ability to show that the maximum restraint technique was standard practice,
right?
But they also corrupted the medical examiner's report. And the one thing they didn't talk about in the Fall of Minneapolis that I thought they might have, and I'm surprised they didn't, was the intervention of the DC medical examiner, Roger Mitchell, and his threats against Andrew Baker, the Hennepin County medical examiner, to expose him and to ruin his life if he didn't amend his his report.
I was surprised too. I have a feeling probably whoever went through, I'll ask Liz next week, but whoever went through that movie probably took that out. I can't imagine it wasn't in there. And you broke that piece of that puzzle, which is very scary because Keith Ellison, you know, again, we have all these people in our all over the country in the Department of Justice on different ranks and levels that we know have committed crimes themselves or have been involved in one way or another. When they put up all of his connections, basically to gang members, Ellison over the years and kind of who he was.
Yeah, Nation of Islam.
Yeah. Right. That he has. And they didn't also bring up that it's Ilhan Omar's district because I guess it's not relevant. But we still have to understand that, you know, this was a giant conspiracy on a real level. I was very disturbed. I don't understand how. Listen, I get the three Marxists that Obama picked and Biden, Obama really picked for the Supreme Court, but I can't understand that fair people, or you know, Justice Thomas or Kavanaugh or any, that they would look at that case. Or no, they didn't even want to look at the case. I guess, what was the rejection? Do we even know
we don't know. That's the thing, is they're totally cryptic about that. And, you know, but the thing is, if they didn't know any more than they read in the media, and even the conservative media, I mean, up until fortunately, with the fall in Minneapolis, has helped break that logjam with the conservative media. Because I remember watching. I watched the trial on, you know, TV, on the internet or whatever, Chauvin trial. And Greg Jarrett, you know, the legal analyst for Fox News, comes out on day one. This is an open and shut case, he says. And he's angry. I can't believe you. I mean, come on. I mean, what got me into the case, as I mentioned to you and I told you, is that a week or two before, I saw a cop using that exact same maneuver on a woman in Kansas City, right in the street. And when I walked down and took a look at it, because she was screaming like a banshee, and it was for at least 10 minutes, I said, thank God she's white. You know, otherwise, this would have been a national scandal, right?
Yeah.
But this, I think the maneuver, the knee on the shoulders, really, not on the neck, works. And, but even if it was on the neck, we know from the medical examiner's report, there was no damage to the neck. No damage, no strangulation, no asphyxiation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, but that's the most important point there, is that it was proven that it wasn't true. Plus the drugs. Plus the other thing is, how about those other people that got on the stand and lied? They just lied, and they knew that they lied, and they were encouraged to lie. And then, like you said, they say in the movie, and it was very clear that the jurors knew that the jurors were threatened and they were scared. Sure. And that's why change of venue should not be up to, you know, it should be a. There just needs to be a lot of things done, because change of venue should have happened for the January 6th. They should have been tried where they were from. Everyone knows that, by a jury or their peers. Derek Chauvin couldn't probably get a fair trial anywhere near Minneapolis. But the hardest part about all of this, too, is the vitriol and the hatred of these people that were involved, without even like thinking that they're actual. They dehumanized them so much so. But I mean, for me now, and I've known this all along, but after watching this, to think of all the statues and all that they've turned George Floyd into a hero, watching how he behaves in that from beginning to end. And I don't care how scared he was or how high he was. Nobody should act like that when they're dealing with police or cops or anything. It was a disgrace. This wasn't somebody that was cooperating in any way. The amount of times that he had, that he could have just sat there, been calm, and allowed the process to take place, he would still be alive, first of all.
Yeah.
But the way that he's behaving is so disgraceful. I'm sorry that he's dead, and nobody should have died under any circumstance. But the way that he's acting, and now we have to pretend that he's some kind of hero, and they go through his criminal history. This is decades of criminality. And now we have to all pretend. Joe Biden got up there on his birthday and said basically how George Floyd should still be alive and how he was a hero. And we have to all suspend our everything and pretend that this is true. And it's not true.
Yeah, we've had to suspend a lot of things that were, I mean, not you and I, but the nation in general has been asked to suspend the sense of reality. In fact, Nancy, in the Pelosi, I think this shows up in the film. where she's saying George Floyd sacrificed his life for justice.
Right. I know.
You know, the word that describes his behavior, and which makes it utterly non-heroic, is unmanly, right? Yeah,
exactly.
I mean, he's crying like a kid, like a baby.
Oh, my God. Exactly.
And then he's asking for mama, right?
Yeah.
And at the end, and that triggers the hearts
that
of all
clip,
the
you know,
parts of America. Mama, you know, I mean, you know, guy, by the way, on battlefields, that's what virtually everyone says at the end. They're asking for their mothers. I'm told, you know, from.
Yeah. But his the woman that I think was the girlfriend is saying to him in the car, calm down, just do what they're saying. The other guy is saying, calm down, just do what they're saying. There's other people that are like, what? He was acting like you're saying unmanly, but like a child having a temper tantrum for the entire time. You know, these guys, those cops were in a terrible situation. Also, he's huge and he was clearly on drugs. So, you know, I mean.
And what are they going to do? Call the police?
They are the police. Right. And then it's so sad for our country because, you know, the damage is done. There are George Floyd, poor Martin Luther King, you know, having all of his, you know, statues and his all so many things named after him. Now they're putting George Floyd as if they're equals. I mean, in a lot of places.
Biden made that comparison. He said George Floyd's death has resonated even more than Martin Luther King's. You know,
my God, can you imagine that this is where we are? And it's just so hard to watch because the worst part is, Jack, and you've dealt with this because you do a lot of this kind of work, and we'll get into what you're doing now in a second. But the hardest part, because you've been an investigative journalist on the level of really uncovering things well after they are sold as facts.
Right.
Public. Nobody ever apologizes. Nobody ever steps up and says, you know what? I did lie about the Russiagate. You know what? Hillary Clinton should have been charged. You know what? Like never. It's like there is never a case that I can think of such tragedy and injustice. And in this case, the George Floyd case or Trayvon's case, that people are ever held accountable for wrongdoing and never, ever take responsibility. Ever. It's amazing. And the people that suffer and that have been wronged go through their whole lives. Even if Chauvin got out now, you know, he'd have to go start a whole new life with a new name. All the other guys, those cops, they're in jail for no reason. It's just there is no reversal. There's no reversal, it seems, ever.
Right. 10 years after his acquittal, George Zimmerman's living in the shadows. He had to take a new name and he still can't get a real job because, you know, no one's going to hire a George Zimmerman, no matter what he calls himself.
Right.
But for an interesting segue about apologies, I just happened to reread today Naomi Wolf's apology to Conservative America. Did you ever read that?
I did read it when it came out. I see her continuing to try to make amends. But yeah, I did see that. And I thought, what did you think of that?
It's heartfelt. It's, you know, and it's kind of brave because no one, you're right, no one apologizes on their side.
No.
And what she apologized for was her misapprehension about January 6th, right? And she goes into great detail, and this is coming from someone who was kind of an icon on the left.
I know.
And her, you know, when she was consultant to Al Gore and to Bill Clinton and, you know, was a spokesperson for the feminist movement, et cetera.
Yeah.
And she lays it all out. And she, you know, this classic red pilling, but what got to her was watching Jacob Chansley walk around the rotunda, you know, be escorted by the police, leading a prayer, thanking everyone, you know, exiting. You know? And when you watch the January 6th footage, and there's strong parallels, but there's no understanding January 6th without understanding May 25th of 2020, the George Floyd case, because they one led to the other.
Yeah.
And what shocked me about the footage in the fall of Minneapolis was the violence directed against the police, throwing Molotov cocktails at police cars that are occupied, right? These guys having to run for their lives from a police station they were ordered to abandon.
Yeah, that police chief, what a coward. And the mayor, my God, where is that guy now? But I have to tell you also, I agree with you. I even seeing the footage of the burned out police station and the woman going in there and being like, that was my office.
Right.
And them all talking about, like, even when they were talking about, we had this whole museum of all of our medals and all of that, it was burned to the ground. And you know, and how it was ransacked in the police office. I mean, it was such an ugly time. And again, don't forget, we were all going through, I was in New York at the time, so we were all going through the hands up, don't shoot, continuation, marching in the streets and all of that, right. The aftermath. And also that woman, which reminded me of your book, Untenable, the woman that says, like, her and her husband had to move. They, you know, yeah. That woman that's like, this was my, I didn't want to move. I didn't want to leave. You know, they burned down their business. And this happened all over the country, and it continues again and again. And we have a real situation where, what is justice in America at this point? It's a game. It's not real. And how can a society survive this kind of injustice? The other thing that's so disturbing, I know you know this and you reported on it early on, they awarded the city council, and you saw that woman on there, what a piece of garbage. They awarded the family of George Floyd $27 million during jury selection.
Yeah, right. During and they weren't admitting, sequestered.
Look, I mean, can you imagine what the case was over then.
Yeah. Yeah. If there was any hope, it was over then. Right.
Yeah. Why wouldn't the Supreme Court see that alone as a problem to look at the case again?
I know. And that's it. I don't know how the Supreme Court process works. I'd like to think that our guys weren't fully alerted.
I think it's one justice to different sectors, because I remember there was something and it was like, oh, that's Amy Comey Barrett's sector. And then there's something else. I don't know, but I hope it's revisited. It is not over for Chauvin. And I want people to know that did see this. And I think a lot of people, because, you know, another thing, Jack, that happened, and there's I call them Twitter celebrities. They have 500,000 or more people that follow them on Twitter. They're in everyone's feed. People that don't think that much or don't have critical thinking skills or are very easily manipulated, I think that their thoughts are their thoughts. You know, people that spend their time on Twitter. Necessary evil for you and me, because we sell stuff that, you know, it helps us to sell our book or the show or whatever. But I have to say, when some of the footage came out of January 6th, I saw some of the people that had been covering it. Like, you've been covering the George Floyd since it happened. I saw some of the people that have been covering January 6th since it happened, some of these Twitter celebrities that have giant accounts. And they're like, well, who cares? We already knew this for 3.5 years. And I even commented, like, maybe people didn't know it for 3.5 years, but there's also hundreds of millions of people that are not on Twitter and that are only getting Fox News or whatever that, you know. And I when they started on you and I saw that footage years ago, but I felt happy for the people that my own sister called me and she said, I never saw this footage of January 6th of the cops shooting into the crowd and the flashbangs. She didn't believe that was true until last week.
So, yeah, you're right. And it's interesting coincidence too, Mel. Not only the Supreme Court decision and the Floyd, release of Fall of Minneapolis, but the Fall of Minneapolis was followed a day later by the release of all the January 6th footage, right?
Seems
and what both of them have done is, you're right, they've reached out from people like you and I who've been following it and who know, into that middle ground of open-minded conservative America.
Right.
And maybe a liberal or two along the way.
Yeah.
So the people like Megyn Kelly, or, you know, Tucker's stronger, but, you know, the kind of, Megyn Kelly's actually pretty good, but she's getting harder edged. Yeah. But people like her who were not inclined to look into this, because the orthodoxy was so powerful and overwhelming that to stand up against it could cost you your career if you're on a network.
Oh, easily. Right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Speaking of costing your career, a lot of people, I think you and I both have been victims of Media Matters along the way. And and certainly all their other NewsGuard, all the other ones that and Wikipedia that's been totally rewritten for the last 10 years. I think we're both conspiracy theorists. But I have to be honest, regardless of what you think of Elon Musk, I'm very, very happy that Elon Musk is going after Media Matters. I think there's been no more destructive voice in the American mainstream politics or media than David Brock in the last 30 years. And don't forget, David Brock started on the other side going after Anita Hill. And then flipped with the Clintons. But this is where we talk about, you know, especially what you do for a living, which is these narratives that can destroy lives. And Media Matters has been a, in my mind, a domestic terrorist operation to destroy humans' lives with smear campaigns that are coordinated across multiple places. And, you know, I wonder if this is going to make any difference going forward into 2020, that now Media Matters and NewsGuard and the ADL and Southern Poverty Law Center are all having lights shined on them finally, that we didn't have that luxury until now.
No, what I think of Elon Musk, I think he's the hero of our age. I really do. The John Galt of, 21st
century. He is like John Galt. Yeah.
Who transcends the everyday. I read Walter Isaacson's biography, which is very informative up to a point. But when Elon Musk takes the red pill, and it actually started over COVID, like as it has for a lot of people.
Yes.
Walter Isaacson, who's just a total creature of the establishment, although he's a smart guy and he reports somewhat fairly, he can't go there. The Twitter purchase to him just seems to him crazy and nutty. Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, he's like Elon Musk had become a captive of these conspiracy theories. And when you look into the background of a lot of the J6 people, I'm working on a new book now on...
Right.
With the focus on Ashley Babbitt, but I've expanded the focus to the women of January 6th and others, because there's other women who are
Rosalynn Boylan and another woman.
Right, Roseanne Boylan. But to your point about when Roseanne Boylan begins to see the light, her family members think that she's the captive of a cult, right?
Right, I know.
All her family members, but the one most outspoken one was her brother-in-law, who gets up there the day she's killed and says it's all Trump's fault, you know? She was a perfectly fine person until she started believing all this stuff about stolen elections and whatnot, you know? So,
yeah.
And there is that. And then she gets ratted out. No, that's not her. That was someone else I was thinking about. The willingness of neighbors and friends to rat
Nazi
these
Germany.
People out.
Not new. Right. It also happened in Mao's China. It's very twisted.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, I saw a picture of her wandering around the rotunda, call, right? FBI, right?
Yeah,
and these
imagine?
Are the same people who've been lecturing us for 70 years about the poor Hollywood 10 who wouldn't name names.
Oh, right,
you know?
Blacklist.
Name names.
Yeah.
These people were naming names on their neighbors and their relatives, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had a girl that came on my show a couple times, Kirsten. She was ratted out by a friend that called and the hotline. A lot of people I've had on about 16 of the January 6th people. One that still hasn't gone to court to this day. And I'll tell you right now, a lot of them. And guess what? I'm told there's still 800 warrants, and they're not done. And we already know that, whatever, this is the same thing I feel about George Floyd. Whatever happened, it's terrible. It shouldn't have happened. You know, let's get to the bottom of it. But the idea that we're destroying lives, full on destroying lives and futures and families and the ability for anyone to function in the world over things that have not been investigated, that have not been looked into. Like you're saying, it's that Jacobin justice. But to see some of these lives that have been so thoroughly destroyed, you wonder what happened to humanity. Because there is, I say, about 30 million people on the far left or left or whatever, that they're happy that what happened to Chauvin, or probably 100 million for that. They're happy what's happening to the January 6th people. They're happy. These are not human beings to them. They deserve it.
No, they're deplorables. I mean, and Hillary encapsulated their thinking about these people perfectly. They're deplorables. They're not real human beings.
Right.
So when you look at Michael Byrd shooting Ashley Babbitt, it's like the sheriff in The Walking Dead shooting a zombie, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's looking at her like, this isn't a real person. This is a deplorable.
Yeah.
Or when they're beating Roseanne Boylan and the thing where Victoria White, they're beating her and they're... Especially the women. They seem to have a penchant for beating women. And yet, you know, I've been watching lots of tape, and you're probably way ahead of me in watching J6 tape, but And I'm always been a supporter of the cops. So were the people in this crowd. And they're saying, we had your back. We're the ones who had your back. You know, why are you turning on us?
Yeah, it's going to be quite a journey.
The leadership that day, and you can see it in the videos, was so chaotic. So, you know, there are good people there and among the police, a lot of good people, and some seriously bad apples who've never been controlled before. And so they're just casually shooting, you know, flashbangs into a pack out of innocent people.
Yeah. And they know it. They know it. And there's a lot on tape. But the other thing, too, is that there's a woman, Pittman, who got promoted, basically, that a lot of people that I've talked to that are cops that do believe that they were set up that day. They'll probably tell you a lot more because you're writing a book on this. But it was her and one other woman that were Capitol Police. And don't forget, nobody should ever forget that the woman that runs D.C., Bowser, is married to what's her name? Donna Brazile. They're a couple, and they were involved also in the Seth Rich case too that we've talked about before.
Right.
And these are operatives. They are not. This is not. I mean, she's a lifelong Democrat operative married to the mayor of D.C. that really should have to answer for what really happened that day. The Capitol Police, the Metropolitan Police. There's without the interest of the public forcing it. And at this point, it's going to take that. You know, none of this stuff goes adjudicated. And there's another person whose life was ruined and nobody cared. And it was a lie. And you know, that's why I'm grateful you're writing this book. And I'm glad you're expanding it to the women, because there were women on the other side, Pelosi and these two women I'm talking about, Bowser.
And Yolanda Pittman, right.
Right.
Yeah, and they, you know, they fired the police chief immediately, it was a Stevens son, I think.
And I think Pittman has like a $250,000 job at Berkeley now.
Yeah, and she was the head of intelligence. And the intelligence was ridiculous. I mean, this is their job. I mean, they have only one job, is protect the Capitol. And when you watch it, you think, you think sabotage. You think that this was purposely. And
how
some of the cops say that during the course of their...
Right.
On their body cam saying, we were set up, you know.
Oh yeah, there's cops on their body cam saying that they're dressed up and go in as Antifa. I mean, there's so much evidence of that. And then, but then again, then we have all these people like Ray. I mean, this is the same thing. Ray, Comey, all these, they get up there and they lie. They don't care. They don't care this is why, you know, and I'm almost done, but I'm writing a book too. And the one thing that I struggle with in all of it is, how do these people not, where is their conscience? Where is their sense of duty to the nation? I remember General Flynn, I was on, I was either talking to him in real life or I was on a show with him, and it was before the January 6th thing. It was after January 6th happened and before the committee. And he goes, Nancy Pelosi is seriously going to pursue this committee thing. She's going to tear this country apart on purpose. He goes, you just watch. And then a few weeks later, bam. The show started. It was all fake, the entire January 6th committee, and it was orchestrated. And the end goal is what the question here was: it to cover up the crime that was committed on the 3rd, or was it to set up Trump to be an insurrectionist to not run in 2024? Whichever it was, it failed on both fronts. Yet all these people's lives are ruined, and they're innocent.
Yeah, I mean, it was their kind of Reichstag moment. You know, they have this, you know, like a
there's something to it. You can't dismiss it.
I'm disinclined to find conspiracies where incompetence can explain everything. And there's a lot of incompetence involved anytime there's something like this. At lower levels, there's a lot of incompetence. But at the upper levels, I think they wanted this to happen.
Yeah. Laura Logan, I'm sure you'll talk to her at some point too. And the one thing that we talked about when she was on with me was also the timing of this breach and everything. It's just so many things happen that I'm excited for you to kind of figure that, like, to do what you do, which you do best in your books, is kind of follow the timeline and how things unfolded and all the different pieces, because I think we need an accounting of that. And a lot of people are angry that Jim Jordan. Remember, Pelosi wouldn't let Banks or Jordan be on the January 6th committee. Right. And then they never did that. And I do think, I hope that this isn't another case. I mean, your book will do it and some other things, but I hope that this isn't another case where we pretend it didn't happen and nothing goes forward. Like,
now this is too big to unlike Chauvin, which can be swept under the carpet. This cannot be. Too many people have a vested interest in getting the truth out.
Right.
The tide has turned in the telling of this story. And it, you know, I don't know if you've been watching Laura Logan's series on Ray Epps, excellent.
Yeah.
And there's another case, Laura Logan. And when you read these articles on Vanity Fair, what happened to Laura Logan?
I know
she used to be a star on 60 Minutes, and now she's peddling conspiracy theories. No, she just decided that she had to get rid of the corporate overbearers and tell the truth, right?
Yeah, and honestly, I know her well in real life. You know what happened to her in Egypt and everything? She's a real hero. Yeah. And for them to go after her, no, she's just not afraid to look at the ugliness that most people rather just not. She wants to see it.
I think that was probably a pivotal moment in her.
But they've tried to destroy her even still. And you would still, just for knowing her history alone and that she got up and is such a warrior and went forward and continues to go, she doesn't care what they think because she did survive. And I mean, that's what we have. We have a bunch of cowards that can pretend to be journalists that care more about being invited to the Council of Foreign Relations cocktail party at the Waldorf than they do about being journalists.
That's right. And, you know, in fact, when you read about Laura Logan in the mainstream, they omit the Egyptian incident.
It's disgusting.
Because they don't want to
make her look like a hero and a survivor. Make her look like a hero.
Right. That's right. And just as they omit, when you watch the videos of the Trump speech, and they did this with George Zimmerman, you see the parallels. So with Trump's speech goes, I want you to march to the Capitol. And then they cut.
Peacefully and patriotically.
In the Zimmerman case, and NBC got sued for this, the dispatcher says to Zimmerman, are you following him? And Zimmerman says, yes. And then the dispatcher says, well, you don't have to. And Zimmerman says, okay, and stops, right? So they just they cut it at the, are you following him? Yes. And then they have him. They're so bad. These are the people. I get it with government officials that, we expect them to be corrupt.
Yeah.
But how do you're a reporter from the New York Times, Washington Post?
I don't get it.
And you get up in the morning and say, what am I going to misreport today? You know, what am I going to omit today? What am I going to suppress today? You know, what am I going to step around today so I don't have to report on? What lie am I going to perpetuate?
And why? I'm not sure. Why? Yeah. It's so crazy. Yeah. Why? And, I remember Donald Trump used to say right to their faces, if you just started reporting the truth about the Russia hoax, you would be the greatest journalist alive right now. Nobody's telling the truth. And he was telling the truth and nobody would do it. And then the people that would, like Laura and other people, then they were conspiracy theorists or they were Trump people and this whole new thing, far right. I don't even know what this means. So, we keep battling. So you now are, as people should know, digging in, thank God, of all the journalists and all the writers out there that could do the story of Ashley Babbitt justice, you are the one that I would choose. So that's going to be an incredible experience for you. But, we're still...
And there's so much out there. And I will say this, is that there are many, and I can't even name them all, and you know them better than I, as citizen journalists, independent journalists, who've done yeoman's work already, sorting through the videos and picking them out and finding the plot lines and doing the preliminary research. And, my job, and I've done this on other projects too, is to connect the dots. And I always give credit where it's due.
I know.
So I can, unmasking Obama, I didn't want to write a positive book a book about Obama, period. I wanted to write a book about the heroic journalism of independence, who busted him on every front, who exposed all the scandals, who launched them into the stratosphere. And in some cases, reporters like Cheryl Atkinson, who took it another level, right?
Yeah.
And that cost them their careers and their humanity, But there are people out there who are doing the good things. And I think they deserve credit for doing it.
Yeah, but also that's the great part about your work. And I know I've mentioned a couple people that have been on this show and I'm sure watch this show that are doing that work. But you know what? They're not they're like what you, what I like what you do, because they're all siloed and they're in their own, you know, right. And with the social media and all of that, especially in the Obama book, what you did was you pulled together like all these different like heroes that got to the bottom of the story, despite, and it's gotten a lot worse. But like you said, we're on the other side, I believe, of the lynch mob mentality, at least when it comes to people having a little bit more of an open mind, because they've been lied to so much. That it's been proven so much that if you are still taking the storyline coming out, especially this current, press secretary right now just lies. I mean, everyone knows it. And it's just, it's so insulting. People are at a point of righteous indignation when it comes to the journalists that are working for the government. And we've seen everything. So I'm very excited about that. Now, Untenable is still out there. And it is a really important book when it comes to what is happening, because this is still happening to all of our cities. And I think it's really important to understand that as well. Plus, it's a good book because a lot of people live that experience. I was just at Thanksgiving with a bunch of 80-year-olds. I mean, my mom must have invited every single person in the neighborhood that had nowhere to go. She did. It was so nice. But I didn't know most of the people there. And all these people have backgrounds like that. They were from the Bronx or from Camden or from. I said to them that I was having you on, and I said, my friend Jack wrote a book, and then they start talking about it. And it's such a common experience that doesn't get out there enough. So.
And it's a story that no one has told before. But it also, it talks about the whole cauldron of the 60s, in which this whole racial dynamic was put together and launched.
Right.
You know, and Newark, you know, which I talk about, had the first great riot in 67. And I dissected how it started. Right. And you see the many of the same forces at play with the whole George Floyd stuff. Right. You know, the outside agitators. Yeah, they are there.
Scary too. I had on my show this professor that teaches a lot about Marxism and socialism. She infiltrates their groups. And she said that Angela Davis is the hero of the entire Marxist socialist movement of teachers. That's who, and that goes back to your the time you're talking about.
Yeah, and she's still making speaking rounds. She spoke here at
she's very
the
famous.
University of town in Kansas City a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, apparently a lot of our curriculum that is Marxist.
Forget about my role in killing bailiffs and court key people, you know. No. That's all history, you know. So
yeah. Well, I'm glad you're still preserving it for us. And I'm looking forward to the next project and seeing you again. You have a great new podcast. I know it's not that new, but it may be new to my audience. So I just watched your last episode.
I should promote it a little more.
And it was very funny. I enjoyed your
It's called Upstream. With Cashel and Edge, or on YouTube, you look for Upstream Podcast, but it's on most of the platforms.
Great.
And we're on once a week. It's kind of humorous.
Good.
And basically, we took our title from Breitbart quote, which is all culture is downstream from politics. No, all politics is downstream from culture.
Right.
So rather than talking about the politics of the moment, we kind of go upstream to the source and try to find out the dynamic that was responsible for the politics downstream.
Right.
My partner is a Hollywood veteran, funny guy, Roy Edge. He knows everyone and does voices and things.
Great. I love it. And then also Cashel.com, as always. I highly recommend Untenable as well, which you can get on his website or anywhere books are sold. And I'm looking forward to the next adventure you take us on, because no one digs in quite like you.
I will keep you posted, and I appreciate all your help along the way, Mel.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. And I will see you before then. But thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate everything that you do and say. And everyone, please follow him. He makes a lot more sense than almost 90% of the people writing out there. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mel. Appreciate it.
Oh, I hope you're enjoying the show. I was just talking on my new Patriot Mobile service. I have to tell you, I'm so excited. They are incredible. They are America first. They align with my values. And you know what? It's unlimited minutes, unlimited text, Wi-Fi calling, unlimited data, high speed, everything that you could use, just like everyone else. We have our time, we have our vote, and we have our money. And the great thing about Patriot Mobile is your service will be exactly the same. Difference with Patriot Mobile is they are an America First company. And what they do is they reinvest their money into causes that matter to me and matter to you and matter to this nation. At Patriot Mobile, those causes are the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, the Constitution, and our children's future. So please go to themelkayshow.com. Patriot Mobile is a partner of ours. Please use the code MELK. What I can tell you too is that they are supporting me and they are supporting creators because they believe in the First Amendment. They believe that censorship is wrong and they are going to put their money where their mouth is. Do what you can for the creators out there that are doing what I'm doing. Please go to Patriot Mobile, MELK Show. All I can say is thank you so much, guys. Supporting my partners supports me, and Patriot Mobile is absolutely awesome. I checked them out. We're switching to Patriot Mobile, and we hope you do too. Thank you so much. Everyone's been asking me what I've been doing because I am in better shape than I've been probably maybe in my life, and I am now thriving, and I have so much energy. I'm going around. I'm doing all these tours, and I'm doing the show, and I'm showing up at small events and big events. And I'll tell you, the one thing that's definitely changed my life is superfoods. Mel K superfoods. When I got involved with superfoods in the beginning, I was not eating right. I was not sleeping right. I was not, it was mid-COVID, so I wasn't really doing much, and I was doing a lot of things wrong. And then I found superfoods, and it has changed me from the inside out. Not only have I dropped weight, which wasn't even the goal, I really wanted to detox. I wanted to help my immune system. I wanted to make sure I didn't get sick while a lot of other people were, and superfoods came into my life and changed everything. I now think about what I'm eating. I don't have cravings. I don't eat late night. There's a whole protocol. It's so easy. It's laid out for you. You take it out of the box. It's there. All your food's taken care of, all your nutrients, all your energy, all your protein. It is an amazing way to change your life from the inside out. Superfoods changes everything. It gives you a protocol. It gives you a schedule. You know what to do. You know what you're eating. You feel great. You look great. Your life's getting better. And the one thing I know is you can go to themelkayshow.com, go down to superfoods, and you can start your journey. Because today is the day. I will tell you, I waited, and then I started superfoods, and within 3 months, my entire life changed for the better, more than I could have imagined. MelKShow.com, go to partners page, down to superfoods, and click on the link, and you will find a whole new world that will change your mind, change your body, change your life. So when you get superfoods, that helps me and helps this show keep going. I cannot tell you how much it's changed my life for the better, and it will yours too. And enjoy the rest of the show. Mel K Superfoods. Get over there now. There's no time like the present.